Hello, I'm Russell Rowland, author of 56 Counties, A Montana Journey. A few years ago, I visited every county in our state and interviewed people from all walks of life. I then read dozens of books about the history of Montana and the West. I wanted to explore what it means to be from Montana, how it impacts the people here. This program is a continuation of that conversation. I'm talking to people about how Montana has shaped them and what they are doing to shape Montana. Welcome to 56 Counties. Coal mining was the major source of jobs in Carbon County until a tragic explosion in the Bear Creek mine decimated the population of Red Lodge and the surrounding communities. 74 miners and a rescue worker were killed on February 27, 1943, and although the mine reopened, it only remained open for another 10 years. The town was never the same. Today, Red Lodge survives mainly on recreation and tourism, with Red Lodge Mountain, a ski resort, drawing people from all over eastern Montana. It also serves as the most scenic gateway to Yellowstone Park, with the Beartooth Highway taking tourists on a breathtaking journey through Cook City into the park. My guests for this episode of 56 Counties are Doug McKay, whose grandfather Malcolm established one of the first cattle ranches in Carbon County in 1901, and his wife Sari, who spent much of her childhood in Laurel, served as the primary fundraiser for what is now the largest employer in Carbon County, Beartooth Billings Clinic, which opened in 2010. You guys both have a pretty interesting history. I want to start with you, Sari. You mainly grew up in New York, but you ended up in Laurel, Montana when you were a teenager. You want to tell me about that?
Yes. When I was in the middle of junior high, my parents split up. And so I was 13. I started school pretty young, so I was 13 at the time. And my parents were wise enough to send me away because it was a very chaotic divorce. And they sent me to live with my grandmother, Elsie Johnston, in Laurel. Elsie was kind of a community leader, and her husband was Paul, also known as Pink Johnston, who was a lumberman, originally from Nebraska.
So, Doug, you have a New York connection, too. Your great-grandfather, did he start the New York Stock Exchange, or
he was president? He was president, but he didn't start it.
Okay.
And I don't really know too much about that history, but I just know that he was very involved in that aspect of things.
And then your grandfather?
Yes, his son, Malcolm, my grandfather, didn't have a taste for the same urban environment that my great-grandfather did, and he came out to Montana when he was 19.
Yeah.
And fell in love with Montana and the cowboy lifestyle and wanted to explore that for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm. So if I remember right, he talked his dad into financing him to buy a cattle ranch.
That's correct. And I'm not sure what Donald thought of all of that, but he ended up purchasing a ranch just outside of Roscoe, mm-hmm. Known as the Lazy EL, and actually added on to that as years went by. But that was his first mm-hmm. purchase out here.
1901.
Wow.
Yeah.
Moving from New York to Laurel. Yeah, when I, it's kind of a tough topic in a way. When my parents were struggling, you know, trying to redefine their lives as a divorced pair of people, they were very preoccupied with what was happening to them. And so, as often happens in a divorce, we were running around like hoodlums and doing our own thing and not getting a lot of supervision. And that was right at the time when drugs were coming in to, they were spreading out from the larger urban centers and they were reaching Buffalo, New York, and then drifting south to where I lived, which was a very idyllic, you know, rural area. Mm. But my friends were getting into drugs, and it was only a matter of time before I started using, and I was glad to end up in Laurel, Montana, where the big thing was hanging out at the pool. There was a pool on First Avenue, and it was such a big thing. What are you going to wear to the pool today? You know?
That was your biggest worry?
Yeah, my biggest worry became very countrified and very non-threatening. Mm-hmm. So it was I just blossomed in Laurel. I really did.
That's fascinating.
I became much more peaceful. And I think what was happening to me back east was that people were starting to define me before I had a chance to define myself. And Laurel, Montana gave me the opportunity to define who I was in a very original, you know, generative way.
Right. And so you grew up on part of that ranch. So what was that like for you growing up on a ranch?
It was great. I was only a year and a half old before my parents decided to take their share of the EL and take it divided off and start their own ranch, the Top Hat Ranch. But so that's really my memories are on the Top Hat. I don't really remember even being on the EL at that point. But it was fantastic. I being a ranch boy and going to the Roscoe Grade School, where there was four kids in my class, and riding our horse to school sometimes and stuff like that. It was very idyllic and kind of like Opie in the on the TV show kind of a lifestyle.
Yeah, but sure. So, but you didn't have the itch to keep going in that in the ranch business?
Not so much. When we were working on the ranch as I grew older, I mean, we built so many barbed wire fences and stacked so much hay that I kind of got that out of my system, and it wasn't really something that I wanted to do as a lifestyle. We all had the good fortune of going back to a military school in Minnesota. So when they sent us back to that school, I kind of got a taste for, you know, just a little bit different type of a lifestyle. And it was a little bit of a culture shock going from four kids in my class at Roscoe Grade School to an all boys military high school. But I knew I was going to be going because all my brothers had gone before me. So.
Okay. Huh. So, Sari, what did you do after high school, after Laurel High School?
After Laurel High School, I went to Boston to college for a short time and then transferred to the State University of New York, which has like 11 campuses all over New York State. And I ended up graduating summa cum laude from my school in Fredonia, New York. And that was right near my old stomping grounds of childhood. So I was near the lake that I loved and could enjoy all the wonderful things that area had to offer. But I couldn't stop thinking about Montana.
Is that right?
Could not stop.
It got into your blood.
The sky. The sky was just such a big, a big draw for me. And so I just gradually started making plans and, you know, had different sort of early career type jobs. The most interesting of which was I worked for the county historian, who was about 180. I think when I worked for her, her name was Miss Crocker. And she was a maiden lady who lived in a big Greek Revival style house in Fredonia, New York. And she was the county historian. And there are very few people out there who are going to remember a CETA job, but it was called the County Employment and Training Act. And it was in the mid-70s. And I got a CETA job, and it was a real plum at the time. And so I worked for Miss Crocker for about 2 years before I had enough funds to come back to Montana.
So that was your plan?
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
And what did you do when you got back?
Oh, I was pregnant. I was so determined that my daughter would be born in Montana. Mm. So I drove out here by myself. My husband was left back in Western New York State to sell the house, and he would come later. So I drove out to Montana by myself. And she was born about 6 months later. Oh, okay. So, yeah.
So, Doug, what did you do after military school?
I came back to Montana and I did a little stint with University of Arizona, and one summer I went back to Carleton College with my mother. We went to some kind of a psychic seminar where we met various types of New Age type people, and this gal was really, I was quite impressed with this one gal, and I wanted to actually study under her, but she said, no, I'm not taking on any new students, but there's this gentleman that just got back from India that's from Montana. His name's William Staniger, and he's going to be at a ranch in Montana, and he might take you on and would be an interesting person to study under. Huh. And long story short, the gal that I was living with at that time and I went up there and were welcomed into his group there, which was at a ranch which is now known as the Feathered Pipe Ranch in Helena. Mm. And we just enjoyed that whole experience so much that we ended up going out to California in the summers after that to form the seminars that we would put on at the ranch. At that time, and so that was kind of the burgeoning experience for me to be at the forefront of what was now the Feathered Pipe Ranch.
Oh, really? So you did workshops and what kind of?
Oh gosh, we did all sorts of stuff, like out of body experiences. We had John Lilly, who worked with various types of like sensor deprivation tanks, and you know, it was very kind of cutting edge, new age stuff at that point in time.
Yeah.
And they basically evolved more into meditation and yoga as far as an orientation, and that's what they really cater to now.
That is really fascinating. So, yeah. I just have to try to understand how you went from being a ranch kid and a military school kid to, I mean, that's quite a...
Well, you know, I've always had, I was raised by my mother, who was very into various spiritual type things like Edgar Cayce, and she had what they called the God Squad, a bunch of the, her and Susan Heinemann was part of the God Squad, and a lot of these other ladies in the community would get together, and they would study some of these Seth Speaks and Edgar Cayce and a lot of these different types of things, which were somewhat avant-garde in that regard. But so we were raised with a kind of a very open perspective of spirituality, and I think that's what drew me to the Feathered Pipe Ranch.
Yeah. So how long were you involved with that?
Oh, gosh, I was probably 4 or 5 years I was involved with the Feathered Pipe Ranch. Matter of fact, we're going to be going back this summer, hopefully, to a memorial of the gal who started at India Supra. But it's just kind of up in the air now whether virus is going to allow us to all get together or not.
Sure. You're listening to 56 Counties on Yellowstone Public Radio. I'm Russell Rowland, and my guests this month are Doug and Sari McKay from Carbon County.
Okay, when I came back to Montana, I got a job at Odegaard's Hardware. Mm. I don't know if you remember Odegaard's.
Of course I do.
Yeah.
Billings?
Yep.
Yeah.
And I
about 2 blocks from there.
Yeah. It was really a landmark for decades in Billings, and I worked in the ad department. I did drawings.
Oh.
I drew pictures of hardware and domestic items, and because I've always been an artist, and they thought my drawings were pretty good, so I worked there for quite a while until my daughter was born. And then after Ashley got a good start on life, I returned to work and really began following a more focused career path in nonprofit communications. and patient education for healthcare and community relations, and as an outgrowth of that, fundraising. So I became much more enamored with the fundraising as time went by, and it to me it was always a very spiritual thing, because most of us want to make a difference while we're here on Earth, and I was always happy to be at the right place at the right time when somebody wanted to make a gift that would help someone less fortunate than themselves. So I found fund development and philanthropy to be immensely rewarding and inspiring. And so I stayed with that throughout my entire career and retired about 6 years ago from my final position at Beartooth Billings Clinic here in Red Lodge.
Yeah, that was a big project, right?
It was a very big project.
How satisfying was that?
It was amazing. It was a $27 million hospital project, and in order to obtain the loan, which was a USDA loan, we had to demonstrate what we used to call skin in the game. And so we raised money locally and got some grants and astounded everyone by raising $4 million.
Wow.
So USDA was rather impressed, and they had no problem giving the money.
The rest of it.
Right.
And that was during the 2008 debacle.
Yes, it was during the Great Recession of 2008. So it was a campaign of small gifts. We didn't get any million-dollar gifts or any even, I don't think we even got a $500,000 gift. Wow. They were all small gifts, and we had a great groundswell of support.
I think I only gave $400,000.
That's right. That's why your name is a neon on the wall, flashing. Yeah.
Sarah, you want to talk about your creative life? You do both painting and write books, so why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. I knew for years that I would write a book or books about Montana, and I did manage to publish two of them, Lodestar and Fair Game, which are both sort of love songs about Montana. I actually started college as an art major, so I wanted to get back to my art, and I've done that, and that's been immensely rewarding and very meditative. Yeah.
So, Doug, after you got the New Age stuff, after you were completely centered, then what did you do?
Completely centered.
Actually, I kind of didn't know what I wanted to do career-wise. I kind of delved into a number of different things. I was a financial and estate planner, and got my Series 7 license through the NASD, but I found that that didn't really appeal to me, and went into real estate, and ultimately ended up finding a career as a real estate appraiser, which I worked for myself, and it was a fairly lucrative business, and that's what I stuck with until I retired in 2015.
But you're still active with EMT stuff, right?
I volunteered when I retired. I volunteered at the fire station as an EMT, and I had been with search and rescue. So I love the outdoors. I yearn to get into the mountains as much as I can, and so that was my method of kind of staying busy in retirement.
Sure. So I wanted to ask each of you now about how Montana has shaped you as people and how you've seen it change through the years. So why don't you start?
Okay, well, when I came to Laurel, Montana in the late 60s, and lived with my grandparents for quite a while before my mother sort of reunited our family in Billings.
So your mom moved to Billings eventually?
Right. She went to work for an architectural firm there and was pretty happy doing that for quite some time. My grandparents, I fortunately had an immensely strong bond with my grandmother, my maternal grandmother. And they had a cabin in the Bighorns that has always been a sort of a family touchstone. It's very old. My grandfather built it in 1918 as a bachelor pad and a place from which he could go hunting with his hunting buddies.
Wow.
And it's near Wyola.
Mm.
And that is where he met my grandmother.
Hmm.
And my grandmother was... News of her arrival was floating around Wyola before she got there because she was going to be the new school teacher.
Ah.
And my grandfather was a bachelor of many years. I think he was in his mid-30s. And he asked his friend, who was a school teacher there as well, to go to the train station and look and see if the new school teacher had a ring on her finger. And she didn't, and things proceeded from there.
Wow.
And it's really interesting to hear both my grandmother and my mother talk about what that was like back in the early 1930s when they lived there. It's I think, you know, if I can talk just a little bit about my grandmother and,
yeah.
and what it was like for her growing up. She grew up on a homestead in Fromberg, just over in the Clarks Fork Valley. And there were 10 children born in this little homestead. And when she was born, the place still had a dirt floor.
Wow.
And they later built a, you know, nice home, nothing fancy, but just sort of a modest farmhouse in sort of a Victorian style. And but for many years, they were extremely poor. And they had a vegetable garden and raised their own livestock and butchered their own livestock and so on. And I think when my grandmother... She was the baby of the family, and she had big ideas about just becoming a lady, becoming more refined. And so when she married my grandfather, and he was doing all right as a lumber, you know, lumberman, she felt like this, you know, this is the life to which I have been led. And she... I think I loved her so much that I really tried to understand her attitudes about the Native American people in Lodgegrass and Wyola, because she was never unkind in speaking of them, but there was a sense of her wanting to be better, to raise herself above them. And I think she wanted to be a woman of privilege. And so that was one of the ways that, you know, in her mind, to set herself apart from them.
Yeah.
She just looked down on them. And it's, that's what happens.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard to talk about because it's very taboo.
So, Doug, one of the things, I read your grandfather's memoir. What's it called again?
Cow Range and Hunting Trail?
Cow Range and Hunting Trail, yes. And one of the things that really struck me about it was how, you know, this fairly privileged kid from back east really did seem to have a connection to this place. You know, like he talks about traveling around the country, and I remember one scene in particular where they stopped at this house, and the people... actually invited them to sleep in their beds, but they wouldn't do it. They slept on the floor. But I mean, they were, his whole attitude was not one of like, you know, I'm here to take advantage of anybody. Right. I'm here. He was there to really soak it up. It seems like, do you think that was carried through with into your generation?
I do. And, you know, my when I was raised on the ranch, we used to go on family pack trips every summer. And there was just a very wholesome family orientation to the ranch and to nature in general. And at, that really was instilled in me at a young age. And I mean, I still just yearned to get into the mountains you know, Montana, that's what Montana means to me, and why I was brought back here. I lived in California for 12 years when I was working on the stuff with the Feather Pipe Ranch, but I always yearned to get back to Montana, where it was just a much slower pace, and, you know, the big sky and the whole the wholeness of what Montana really is.
Mm-hmm. So, tell me about your mother's family.
Well, she was a native Montanan. Her family were very Swiss oriented, and they had a dude ranch up the East Rosebud Canyon.
Oh, wow.
Called the Teal Bar.
Huh.
And it was a kind of an amazing family setup where they would take various dudes back into the high country. My grandfather and his siblings were actually very instrumental in making or forming the trails that
oh, wow.
now hook East Rosebud Lake to Cook City.
Oh.
And cool. I've been over that, which is now known as the Beaten Path. And I've been over that beaten path on foot and by horseback many, many times. But I've always admired my mother's family and their Swiss heritage for what they did for this part of Montana.
Yeah, that's very cool. So do you think you picked up on that as a kid and adopted some of that, or did you always sort of know that that wasn't part of your way of looking at things?
You know, I have to give credit to my grandmother's best friend Genevieve Petzold Fitzgerald, who, along with her parents founded a school in Lodgegrass.
Wow.
So that the native children would not have to be sent away to federal boarding schools.
Oh, wow.
When the Petzolds, who were Baptist missionaries, came from back east and created the school, Genevieve, their daughter, was very much involved in the teaching and the culture and keeping the community together. Mm-hmm. And I'm speaking of the Native American community.
Yeah.
And she was my grandmother's best friend.
Hmm.
She was adopted by the Crow.
Wow.
Genevieve was, and her name was Looks to the Mountains.
Wow.
So I think Genevieve and my grandmother, whose name was Elsie, they were the ones who really instilled in me a sense of what it is like to live in Montana and to know the people.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going, we would stop in Lodgegrass on our way to the cabin, and there was a little IGA store that really looked like an old general store from some TV show like Gunsmoke or something. It was just a little wooden store and bare wooden floorboards, and we would go in there to get supplies to take up into the mountains, and I would see these old grandmother Indians there.
Uh-huh.
The Crow women,
right.
And they had beautiful beaded belts,
mm-hmm.
like almost like a sash,
right. Mm-hmm.
And they would be in the store doing their shopping at the same time that I was there, and they were such a fine example of what it means to be a woman. And to care for one's family.
Mm. Mm. So they had a big influence on you. Yeah. Mm. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
Where's my hanky?
You've been listening to 56 Counties. 56 Counties is produced by Russell Rowland for Yellowstone Public Radio. The music is written and performed by Aaron Parrott. Additional funding is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. More information and archived episodes available at ypradio.org. This month's guests were Doug and Sari McKay from Carbon County. Doug is a descendant of Malcolm McKay, one of the first cattle ranchers in the area, and Sari was the lead fundraiser for Beartooth Billing Clinic, which is now the largest employer in the county. Please join me on the first Monday of each month for another episode of 56 Counties.